whispered that one tonight.
Don't look at me.
Well,
sometimes when I get really nervous,
I love Molly Shannon.
What episode is this?
Welcome to episode 12 of
P&B Unplugged.
Thank you, Rodney.
Wasn't it crazy that guy talked about Rodney Balcom this weekend?
It was
like, yeah. Yes.
That was cool.
Love Rodney Balcom.
Yeah. Well, it's great to be with you tonight. Last week, we had a guest on the podcast, and that was a really fun episode.
Uninvited. I'm kidding.
We also had a live studio audience. Two people in our live
studio.
Two whole
people.
And two cats. Thank you, Autumn. In our,
we still got two cats.
We still do. And we have Olivia, but she's not paying any attention to us. She's just playing on her iPad. So, story of our lives. All right. So, tonight's episode is going to be really cool because we're going to talk about what I'd like to talk about is the recording process and how we go about recording our albums. So we don't do that on our own because it would be really, really terrible if we did.
It would it's be not like that. The quality of these YouTube videos.
I was going to go from the God has gifted people.
Amen.
And he has. Thank
he
God.
Really, really
yeah.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah, praise God for that.
Just using everybody else's God-given talent. Yeah. We're just trying
Bring
to
it,
help.
It's like calling the doctor. You know what I'm saying? Why would I try to take his job? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
The kingdom is full of...
You don't want me doing brain surgery on you.
No, thank you.
What we're going to do is... Yeah. Saw the top of your head off, root around in there with a stick, see if we can't find that dad burn clot. No thanks. I'll just die.
Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah. Dr. Caleb.
Oh, Autumn has no clue. I forgot. She wasn't even born.
Yes, I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
You know Jeff Foxworthy?
Yes, but do you know why I know Jeff Foxworthy?
Because of us.
No.
Oh.
I know who Jeff Foxworthy is as a comedian. But I never watched Jeff Foxworthy as a comedian. I watched Jeff Foxworthy on a game show.
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
And the answer is no.
Yeah, I actually tested that theory when Olivia was in fifth grade.
Are you in fifth grade now or sixth?
Sixth.
Sixth.
Yeah, so last year I found out I am not smarter than a fifth grader. My favorite thing, though, she's like, "You want to help me with my math, Caleb?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love math."
Not me.
Then she opened up her math, and I was like, "That ain't math. There's letters in it." So it was. It is crazy. She's a pretty smart kid. It's wild. And Carmen, I'm like, "Carmen, how do you know how to do all this stuff, man?" She's like, "I just kind of have to, you know."
It's called I relearn it.
She relearns
her.
It to teach it to later. I'm like, Carmen is the smartest person in our whole group.
No.
She has to be.
No, I read every day. We just read the books. We just do what's next.
Carmen's like, "Some days I just look at the answer in the back. Yep, you got that one."
What's that?
Okay.
What's that quote in Frozen? Just do the next right thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Do the next right thing.
Thing.
Every day.
All right.
What's everybody drinking?
I am drinking my favorite drink, and actually shout out to our uninvited guest on the podcast last week. He brought me this today. His name is Josh Roberts.
You can't even see it. It's behind you.
He brought me this today, and some people think it's the mark of the beast, but it's actually
just caffeine.
It's actually just caffeine. So
we're working on him. He's yeah. I'm just
what you got?
And to be fair, he does not have one often.
No, I don't have one. Just every day.
Just once a day.
That's a few times a day.
Caleb, what are you drinking?
I am drinking... Autumn has found... Aldi has my favorite coffee back.
It's
only
seasonal.
Happens in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she found it and has got me two cases of it.
Oh, my.
It's maple pecan pie K-cups or whatever. And they're cheap. But they are so delicious. It smells like breakfast is happening in your kitchen as soon as you start brewing it. So thank you, babe. With a little bit of almond milk and some monk fruit.
Monk fruit. Monkey fruit.
It's beautiful.
I'm having water.
Carmen, I'm so surprised.
I'm having water too, but it looks like a urine sample. And
oh, gosh.
It does. I don't know if you can tell. You can definitely tell it's not clear. The reason it looks like a urine sample is because there's about this much unsweet tea in it, and I was just like, well,
you and I don't
up.
Care. We'll put what it's the same. It's just a
it doesn't taste like
put
tea.
Put it in the same
cup.
I would
do that. Definitely.
It does kind of look like a really well hydrated urine sample.
You
yummy.
Had, yeah, now
that's
that we,
awesome.
All right.
I'll mine just, don't ever look like that.
I'll just stick to my monster, as my dad calls it.
Now,
monster.
That's probably what Jacob's urine is going to look like after.
Or it's like those radioactive shrimp from Walmart. Have you seen those? There's like a recall on shrimp right now because it was radioactive.
What?
Yeah, great value shrimp.
Oh,
I swear.
Awesome.
Good thing I'm not rich enough to have shrimp.
I do have shrimp in our freezer, but it ain't from Walmart. It's
we
from
got
Aldi.
Them before the radioactivity, I think. So, anyways.
Okay, back to.
I'm stoked about tonight because this is.
I'm glad you are.
We were just talking about, if you missed the Facebook, if you're not watching the Facebook Lives on Tuesday, you should, because there's been some pretty cool stuff happening here lately. Or if you just like old songs and hymns, or we just kind of hang out. It's a little more focused on our ministry side of things. But we had a great time. We do have a great time. So go over to Facebook, check that out. We're also on Instagram. You can check that out. And we're just rocking and rolling.
Stay connected with us. All right. So we have recorded how many albums?
Six.
Six albums in the last 8 years.
We need to round that up to a godly seven soon.
Amen. Number of completion. I hope it's not the last album we do.
We get canceled for this podcast.
But we have recorded six albums. And before we started Phillips and Banks, I had been a part of a few recordings, but never really done one. I had done one from kind of start to finish, been a part of that process, start to finish. But when we first started our group, it was just brand new for us. And so I have no idea if you all will be interested in this or not, but I find it very interesting, just all the pieces and parts that go into a recording. And honestly, I don't really think any of us knew fully prepared for what it was going to take to record an album.
No.
Before we started. So
now we are.
Yeah.
Not like this anyways. It's definitely been, it's crazy how it has kind of grown the process.
Yeah.
I
feel like it's been a stepping stone. Yeah. You know, our first album we recorded in 2018. We recorded two albums in 2018, actually.
That's crazy. It is
8 years ago. And our first recording was a local recording done by a guy named Joel Sanders and a guy named Dustin Jenkins.
Oh, yeah.
Dustin Jenkins recorded our soundtracks, and Joel recorded our vocals. And then we did one called A Few of Our Favorites, and we actually won a talent show, and that's how we got to record that album. And that was, we did that one in Nashville at Daywind Studios. And so that one was a lot of fun. And then we recorded a Christmas album, which was free for us. Somebody donated, paid the studio for us to go and record our own Christmas project.
If anyone would
project.
Like to do that again, feel free.
Yeah. And then
that one was in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we recorded that one in Atlanta.
Hotlanta.
Then we recorded a project called This Is Your Day. And I would say that that was where we kind of found our identity as a group, I feel like. Up until that point, it had been kind of like covers. Now, the first record, we didn't know what we were doing, but we recorded a lot of original songs.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. The first album, you guys were writing like crazy on that
one. Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I don't know why. Honestly,
Carmen said this to me one time about my testimony. We got to talking about, like, you know, we've shared my story a lot of times, come through addiction, alcoholism, all these things. When I got saved, God sobered me up. He took those things right then and there. And we were talking not too long. All of us were actually talking about that, like, why didn't I have to go through recovery? Why, you know, everybody's story is different. Everybody's journey is different. But I think just like the Lord knew he knew what he had planned for my life. You know what I mean? So he put it on fast track. He put the people around me. He got it done so I could get on the path where he wanted me to go. I met you guys not very long after that, and here we are. You know, but I think about the same thing. Think about how fat Carmen said she'd never written a song before, stuck in the wilderness. Comes to her in the back of a car. We weren't even singing yet.
Mm-hmm.
But God's starting to throw out, like, he's making a way, like you said, stepping stones to get us where he wants us to be. It's crazy how he's done all that.
Yeah, Carmen wrote Stuck in the Wilderness in the back of a 15-passenger van.
No, Lainey's car.
Oh, was it?
Just a regular vehicle.
A Toyota something. I can't remember.
Highlander.
Doesn't matter. Anyway.
Well, Carmen's got another song that I want us to revisit. You all know what that is.
So. Carmen sent me a hook today. Was that a hook for a song?
Yeah.
I thought so. She sent me a hook for a song today. So we may be writing more than what we think. Who knows?
Come on, Cabin.
Yeah, come on, baby. So, anyway, This Is Your Day has songs like Heaven in Your Heart, It Was Covered by Grace, songs that kind of established our sound and established who we are, our identity as a group, I feel like. Then we recorded a hymns project, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I love that project.
I do too.
I mean, I think it's really, really well-rounded and got a lot of variety.
Great musicians.
Sorry, I need to cross my did. Legs.
And then our latest project we released in September of 2024, and it's called Living Proof. All of those albums are available for you to listen to on all the streaming platforms, and they're available on our website. So if you want to check those out and kind of see that stepping stone, you can definitely tell. As we kind of figured out more and more what we were doing. But tonight we want to talk about, like, just the process. Like, what does it take to make an album? And what do you need? What are the pieces and the parts that you need? And what that process kind of looks like. So somebody start me out with the first thing that you want to do.
Money. I'm kidding.
Yes. That is a necessary component. You're right.
I'm just seriously, though.
It is expensive.
It is.
No. Go ahead, Carmen.
Number one is songs, right?
Right.
And we've been given so much good advice through this whole, I mean, throughout this, and people who've come alongside of us and been like, okay, no, this is what you need to do.
you need to rewrite that line because it sucks.
You need to do this. So, from other people's words and just from experience, if you don't have good songs with good, solid words mm-hmm. and good, it ain't gonna work.
Right.
You can put lipstick on a pig,
but it's still a pig. That's
so
right.
If you don't start with good songs, then it doesn't matter what you do to them.
And I think that can be objective in a way, but overall, I don't think it's objective. Do you?
No. I mean,
objective as far as preference, maybe.
That
like
would be like
style.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about just actual words,
lyrics,
that mean something, you know, and mm-hmm. that are scripturally sound and like that are deep enough, you know, to, I don't know.
You can write a song that says Jesus 100 times, but that don't mean it's going to.
Yeah.
I don't remember the Lord doing that.
Well, I will say this. I think this process, like the first step in the process, finding the songs, I think that is the hardest part.
Oh,
it takes the longest.
Yeah, we spent probably a year mm-hmm. on our last album looking for songs, writing songs. We had hundreds, probably, easily, actually, hundreds of pitches, and some of the pitches are ones that almost, you know, we've almost recorded.
You connect with it.
Yeah.
You know?
And you really have to kind of sift through
and
stuff that people give you.
And it depends on what the project needs. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You're like, we can't do five songs.
It could
songs
be a really, really great song.
Yeah.
And you just can't, you have to pass on it.
Yeah, which is kind of sad mm-hmm. sometimes because you're making a choice and you're always second guessing yourself.
And you don't know if your choice is the right one.
That's
until
what I'm
later.
Saying. You're second guessing yourself going, I really hope this is the right song. And if it's not, I'm going to kick myself later.
Or you're going to hear some other group record it and it'll go number one.
Yeah.
Like, I missed it.
Well, it's like that. I know she won't care about us talking about her on here, but Adina Bowman.
Yeah.
That song, we held on to a song of hers for, 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
because we connected with it, we fell in love with it, but it was just like,
just wasn't the time for
it. We get ready to put, nope, it don't fit on this one, and finally it hit this one. I was like, yes. And yeah. Carmen kills that song, but it's just, again, it's, man, it's a powerful message. It's just a good song.
Well, speaking of pitches and writers and all that stuff, maybe some people might be wondering, you know, how we go about receiving material from different writers and that sort of thing. Now, I will say Autumn is a great writer. Carmen is a great writer. I'm not that good of a writer, but
Caleb
will.
Caleb is, he's a good driver.
Caleb is a great singer. But I
got to put one line, I think, in one song, and I was like, wow, I'm cool. We never sing it.
Guess whose solo it is? Mine. We never sing it. Sorry.
But as people may be wondering how we receive, how do you meet songwriters? Well, how do you, you know, how does that come up and all those things? Maybe there's a group out there that's looking to record and they're interested in getting pitches from other people and they just don't know how to go about it. We didn't either. So we'll share some things with you here.
And at first, our producer at the time, he helped us. You know, he had more connections than we had.
When we first started,
he was prompting songwriters that he knew to send things over that we might fit us. And then after that, it's really just about meeting people, isn't it?
Yeah.
And over time, we've met this person or this person or this person, and going to conferences that really helped us meet songwriters who might, you know, be willing to pitch us a song that I think it's like giving your baby, you know. Like,
it is.
I know they write many of them write a lot of music.
But
like you want to choose the right person, the right group for the right song
to carry, you know, that message.
Yeah.
That you know will carry the message the way that you have the vision for it.
Sure.
You know what
so,
I mean?
I mean, it's a privilege when somebody's like, I want to send you this song.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of sad when you don't get to use it, you know, because of that.
I always feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, when people send you a song, it's not always because we don't like the song.
Right.
Sometimes it's just that
it won't work for us.
For us. Yeah. You know, it's not our song.
Well,
we have to be able to communicate that song
and sing it well.
And sometimes it just doesn't fit us. Mm-hmm. And especially being a mixed quartet.
That does make it hard.
That was what I was going to say. There was a song that all of us fell in love with on this last one. But when you hear it, it's a men's quartet.
Yeah.
I mean, it needs to be, that's what it needed. And so,
making connections, I'd say, is the best way to find music.
And how do you make those connections? We have met a lot of songwriters through the National Quartet Convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when we do that, it's in the fall every year, and they call it the granddaddy of them all. And they call it that because it's literally the largest annual event in Southern gospel music. And anybody that's anybody is going to be there. So, you know, like all the big name groups are there, and then most all of the regional groups and things.
Your songwriters
are
going to come there. Your radio people.
Just
going,
a lot like, of connections lot to be made.
The labels are going to be there, you know, all of.
So, and otherwise, let's say you can't come to that or you don't know how to do that. You know, there are major record labels who have their own publishing companies along with them. And if you reach out to a publishing company and say, we would like to record some music, we wondered if you might be able to, and this is the kind of genre that we're looking at, or this is the kind of style we're looking for, do you have anything that you might be willing to send us to record? You can reach out to publishing companies that way.
Yep.
And then they make those decisions, you know, what they send you.
There's also a lot of songwriters within specific groups.
Yeah.
For example, like The Guardians. So John Darren Rousey is the lead singer and the owner now of The Guardians Quartet. And he... one of the owners of the Guardians Quartet. And he is a fantastic songwriter. He's been around gospel music for forever. And actually on our last three projects, he was our vocal producer.
Oh, yeah.
And just an amazing man, loves the Lord, loves the music, and he's a great songwriter. And so we reached out to him individually because we knew that he was a great songwriter. And so he sent us some stuff, and Not Today, which was just a great song on our latest project, he wrote that song, him and a guy named Russ Pruitt.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of groups out there that have songwriters within those groups. And you,
I'd say most groups.
Yeah, yeah.
Have probably somebody in the group that right, writes.
At least right. one person, yeah.
Yeah. So, but the Guardians are pretty lucky because John writes a lot of
music.
Yeah,
and produces. You know,
and
well.
Produces. So, but anyway, so I guess that's kind of how you find those writers. And then we have little parties at either our house or Autumn and Caleb's house sometimes. And we'll just sit down and kind of.
We finished through right here in this corner.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there's a song on the new recording that Autumn and I wrote, and it's kind of tells the story of what Autumn was, well, what we all were going through whenever Caleb was sick up in Pennsylvania. If you've ever heard that story, if you haven't and you don't follow our Facebook page or whatever, maybe one day we'll share that more in depth. But he was very sick, and Autumn started writing this song called Through. by his hospital bed. And then when we got home, we finished writing it right here in this living room. And so that's a neat little story. And, you know, so just wherever we you feel the inspiration, I guess, is when
I
you're
wrote another
write.
Song on the commode at a church. I think I've said that before. On
the commode. Podcast.
Olivia, every time I say commode, she's like, okay, grandma.
Why do you say commode?
I don't know.
Is it a Southwest Virginia
Maybe.
Thing?
Maybe. We've all, I've always said, y'all never say commode.
Mm-hmm. That's what
my mamaw calls it. Calls
your
it
mamaw?
Commode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Commode.
Oh, gosh.
Toilet.
The mamaw.
I know. Yeah. Sorry.
Do you call it commode? You don't. Toilet.
I think I call it toilet. I don't know.
I call it the John sometimes.
I don't talk
I think
about
commode
it
feels less yucky.
Commode is a little bit of more...
I wrote that song while I was sitting on the toilet. Doesn't that sound worse?
It does kind of sound worse.
On the commode.
So just, you know, wherever you feel that inspiration, I guess, is super important.
Sorry.
I think once you, I was just thinking like when we're sent the songs or I think just being open with people helps you a lot too. Just being able to, most songwriters, I figured this out. They know the ones that write all the time are like, I get it. If you can't, I just.
Oh,
know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Not
but that's the thing.
Take offense to it.
I think the first time, This Is Your Day definitely was our first experience having to dig through some of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there were songs, we were just talking about this earlier on Facebook Live, that there are songs sometimes that, I don't know what you do if you're a soloist. I don't know what I would do without you all because it helps me if there's a song. Like on the This Is Your Day, I don't know if you remember this. There's a song, I absolutely love it. We sing it almost every time we go out now, Heaven in Your Heart.
Mm-hmm.
But when we first listened through those songs, I liked the song, but I thought, well, and I just kind of passed over it. Mm-hmm. But there was something about it that stuck with you, and you're like, no, I want you to really listen to this song called Heaven in Your Heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting with it and thinking, man, this is really, it just, it's something that I kind of breezed through. So, but I feel like that's something we all had to learn was, as you're going through all these songs, you can't keep all of them, but you have to be honest with each other of like, what are you feeling in this moment? What's this song? How's it connecting to
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think too, a lot of the song pitches that you get are one person and a piano, or they're not produced
right,
yet.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to see the vision of the song too. Like, oh, this will be a great song to have strings on and a big orchestra and a choir, and you just don't get that in a demo pitch. You have to learn how to kind of see.
And I'll be honest
it
with
takes
you.
A minute.
I'll be really honest with you. I feel like I lack in that area because every time I listen to a pitch, I'm like, I just don't know. Like, I don't know.
Well, you all always say to me, remember, listen to the words.
I know. Yeah. I know. I know that. But it is very difficult.
It is.
For me, it's very difficult.
But I think that's a skill you can acquire. Like,
definitely.
To think outside the box. When you're listening, don't get caught up in the little tiny details of what you're hearing. Make sure that the bones are great. And then imagine. Like, just right. think.
Yeah.
what could this be? When you feel that swell in you, like mm-hmm. of the words or whatever, if the music ain't going with you right then, you can be like, but look what we could do. You know?
Yeah. Our current radio single, I've Seen What It Can Do. We got that pitch from
Rodney Griffin.
And there was no, it was him.
Yeah, him.
Singing alone. He was snapping his fingers and snapping and singing along to it.
It was an a cappella. Mm-hmm. Pitch. I have never received an acapella pitch before.
But I could hear it.
That's the one.
That, I mean, exactly. So it doesn't, I guess you're right, it doesn't require massive production mm-hmm. for you to.
Now that's nice, but.
Right.
But it, definitely not.
But no, required. you don't have to have that. But.
Don't be stuck, is what we're saying. Don't be stuck. If you hear a song and you're like, but there ain't no drums, there ain't no guitar,
I just don't
know what it's going to sound like. Well, just let yourself imagine for a moment, okay?
I think what we may be saying is if the lyrics move you, then don't let the lack of production sway you from recording it.
Create something to make it move you all around.
Exactly.
And get somebody, I think going back to what you were saying about having John, having a producer, our first one, having producers, having people that knew. Don't be afraid to reach out, I guess, and find somebody. Be upfront with them, like, nah, I'm not feeling the connection there. But find somebody you do trust, even if it's a friend. If I was a soloist, say like Joseph Habedank or somebody, I think I would still have to have people like you all who are close to me to say, that's really not.
I don't. You gotta bounce it off of.
Yes. Yeah. You need somebody to bounce it off. You gotta have that. So pick you a team, even to just sit with you and be like, and don't find somebody that just loves everything you do.
Yeah, someone
all
be
four
honest.
Of us are totally different. Our side. If it's Black Gospel, I'm going to say yes. You ain't even heard the words. That's all right. I know it's good. You know what I mean? But all of us bring something to the table. So bring some. Yeah, Autumn would definitely be like, maybe not that.
I think that's why there's so much. It's probably why there's so much variety on our records too.
I love it.
Is because we all like different things.
Yeah,
but you know, it's got to be the right bluegrass song for me to get on board, or it's got to be the right XYZ style of song in order for, you know, Caleb to get on board or whatever. So it just all depends. Now, you said something really important, believe it or not.
Somebody write that down. Put a timestamp on this video.
The first record that we did, like I said, we did local, and we didn't have a producer.
Mm, yeah.
There was nobody, like, in charge of the record.
The hip
I mean, hip. We were in charge of it.
It was
self-produced. But, I mean...
You just don't know.
If I'm being honest, I much prefer having somebody that we can, like, you know...
Bounce stuff off.
Yeah, right.
Because they've done it.
And somebody that you trust to be like, hey, I know that this is what you want to do, but it's not working.
Or the audience isn't going to like
it. They're not going to like it. Sure.
Because you'll get lost in the weeds. That's the problem, is that you're right here and you'll be in the thick of a song and you need somebody on the outside going, okay, I don't think this is going the direction you want it to go in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, overall, I think you're going to be disappointed. And they need to see it from the outside.
And even if you disagree a little bit, trusting them enough to...
Let them be the producer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, like, I was thinking of Not Today. Well, there's a lot of songs. I sometimes wish... I like when artists do that, like, the way it started mm-hmm. and the what it ended up being. Garth Brooks does that sometimes. But I was thinking about Not Today. When we first started it, you and I...
We had to abandon that song that day.
We did. But it was completely different. At first, we were starting it out. I was kicking it off. You were singing the next part
mm-hmm.
of the whole verse.
I remember that.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then, but John, like, he literally went in there and he slept on it. That's
he
what
said,
he called
this
it.
This isn't working.
He said, it's not getting there what I want it, because you all are a quartet. It's a quartet song. So, but he came in the next morning, he's like, we're all four going to hit it and come in. It's just crazy how it.
Yeah, so he wanted it, instead of starting with a solo, he wanted it to start with all four voices singing together. And, you know, I didn't really think about what a difference that would make.
No, man.
Like, I thought, well, that's not going to really matter. And then once you hear the difference, you're like,
it's so full.
Oh, wow.
So different.
Yeah, like, this is exactly the right decision that we needed to make. So. Yeah, having a producer, that is a big thing. That somebody that, number one, has connections. If you don't know what you're doing, or you're just starting out like we were, somebody that knows, okay, we can go to this studio, we can call this guy, he can be the engineer, this guy can mix, this guy can do this, and then we can go over here. And, you know, having all those connections and knowing where to go, because I'll be honest with y'all, I would have been totally lost. I would have never known who to contact. So I'm thankful for a producer that knows who to call and set it all up.
Yeah.
And also, if you were to call, they don't know who you are.
Exactly.
They do not know who you are. You need somebody that they already have a connection with.
Right. And so the producer kind of puts the stamp of approval on your group. And then the, you know, the recording studios and all the people that you're going to be working with as you're going along this process,
off the street.
You know, they trust that producer to say, okay, yeah, sure, come on in, you know, whatever.
I will say we've been very blessed, and I didn't think about that until you were just sharing that. You think about our first project, Dustin knew us. Mm-hmm. We kind of had a background with him, so we went into track. And I mean, I think for our first project, what is it like what we've got for Nashville stuff? It's different. I mean, our vocals have grown. We were talking about that earlier. But think about when we went into track, he kind of knew us, you know, and even you and I, we were still working full time at the time. So we knew Dustin enough. The girls could go down. They had to do, what was the song they did?
Glory That Will Be.
Yeah.
I didn't
without
go down.
Us. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's just the Lord took care of us there.
I was sick, and you three went.
Yep.
The song you wrote.
Yeah. Jacob said, I just remember him saying, just make sure it's driving. Just make sure it's driving. I'm like, okay, bro. And he did. But then you think about the Day Wind Project. We had great guys like the Lord lined up, people that could have talked us into anything because we didn't know anything, but he really protected us. You know what I mean? And then, of course, Rob Neville. Rob would give his whole studio away if he thought he could help you. You know what I mean? But it's crazy, like, the process, how the Lord is taking care of us through all that.
You know, there's a group, you know, Matthew Browder has produced our last three recordings. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was a guy that kind of came in. I mean, I've known him for years.
Yep, me too.
My dad used to have the Browders at our church, and they would come and do revivals and singings and stuff. And Matthew knew who we were, and he kind of, I'll be honest, I mean, he kind of took us under his wing.
He took a chance.
He did. And, you know, I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I really do. So I'm thankful for guys like Matthew that, you know, took a chance on us, and we were able to make a really great recording, you know. It's not easy to make a great recording. It's really not. And it's not, I'm not saying that to brag on us. I'm saying we had a great team of people that helped us, and the Lord, of course, you know. So,
and it takes time.
It does. It really, really does.
Lots more time than you think.
It really does.
Whatever you're thinking, double it.
Triple it.
Triple it.
So the first step is finding the right songs.
Get your team together.
Producer, your team, yeah.
Right. Producer, team, songs. Second step is
songs.
Well, yeah. Pre-production.
Oh, learning the music.
Yeah. Yeah. So the second step, and this is, I think, you'll waste a lot of time in the studio if you don't do the second step.
Absolutely.
The second step is called pre-production.
We've heard
some
horror stories about
we really have
studio
and
time.
Time in the studio is money.
Absolutely. So you're not going to get free time in the studio. So we have a meeting with our producers. It was Matthew, and then John did our vocals. And so John plays the piano really well. We would meet at, like, my dad's church or wherever. We had a piano, and we'd just sit around. We'd print off all the lyrics to the songs that we had chosen in step one. And then all we do is just lay out the skeleton of the song. Mm-hmm. What key are we going to sing it in? Who's going to sing the lead and all that sort of thing, right?
And that's the day where you make sure that everybody has their own features, you know, make sure, because you don't want it to be heavy on one or not. You want it to, for the listener, it would be good if they didn't hear one person the whole time, you know?
Right, right.
So you make sure everybody's got their songs and you're in the right, you can all find the parts and the key that you're in and all those things. And make sure that the song builds correctly.
Absolutely.
Right, so you're laying out key changes. Right. And
you're going to need a piano player.
Yes.
You need
a good one.
I will say this, too, in that process, like Carmen was saying, when you're picking out those keys and your parts and all that stuff, be flexible, because like we were just talking about how to structure that song change, sometimes we'll come into pre-production, just know what you're doing. But because you know what you're doing, John would say, you know what, I don't even know what songs, I couldn't tell you the songs we've started out. Jacob's going to lead this one. No, let's let Caleb lead this one, and then Jacob's going to lead this one. We'll trade songs completely or mm-hmm. change the girls around on things. It's crazy what happens
just
in pre-production.
Just be willing to try whatever.
But
don't lock
that,
yourself in before yeah, you go.
But having that time to like, yeah, this looks better. Then when you, before you take another step, it's kind of like, this works. You know, mm-hmm. I'd never done anything like pre-production. And I've recorded plenty of times with my dad, but we just went in, we sing the same song. You know what I mean?
It was well, and just think about, you know, how much time you could have saved. Or, well, I shouldn't say time, because it's still going to take time, whether sure. you're in the studio or out of the studio, but money, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you saved how much money you could have saved, you know, without wasting that studio time trying to figure out, all right, who's going to lead this one, you know, and what key do we need to have in it?
So that in pre-production, when you leave from there, you're going to want to have a demo track of your own.
Everything.
Something that your song has been produced with just you and
piano.
The piano, just basics. And you don't have to be perfect at it, but just have it in line. Then that goes, those demos go to a transcriber, I don't know what you call them. You know, somebody who's going to write your chord charts for your players. So you send those to your chord chart writer. And it can be the band leader of the session that you're going to be doing, or it can be somebody else that you're paying to, and you're going to pay
them.
Or if
you can do it, go for it, but
yeah, if you can, if you can chart them yourself in the Nashville number system.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yay!
I will say,
you know, we probably could. It would take us a really long time. A really long time.
How about we just pay some money?
Lord, keep providing the money.
It's worth the money.
Yeah, it is. I you know... And don't worry about making those songs, the recordings, like really, really good. Like Carmen said, I wish we could find one
because they all suck.
Yeah. Like on our voice recorder on your phone is all you need. Just record it on your phone, save it down, and then email that to whoever's going to make your chord charts for step 3, which is
tracking.
Tracking.
Which is my favorite
tracking
part.
Is the
is that
best.
Your favorite part?
Oh, yeah.
Even more than vocals, yeah.
All right, cool, cool. So
is it because we sit and do nothing?
Yes.
No, I just like to see it all come together like a puzzle piece.
It's pretty
neat.
And
it's like when you hear it happen, you're like, that's exactly what I had in my head. How did you do that?
Yeah, yeah. So there are guys in Nashville that...
Not just Nashville, but...
No, oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. There are guys
studio
all over...
Musicians.
Yeah, studio musicians. And all they do, some of them tour a little bit, you know, with groups and things like that. Some of them just play studio
that's
sessions.
That's the life, let me tell you.
That would be
I wish
pretty
God
awesome.
Gave me that talent.
Hey, now that's a long day's life.
Yeah,
But you're creating music
constantly.
Like every day. That would be so fun.
I think about that, but then I also think like some of those guys, you think about the ones that are like, we need 10 songs in, you know, 3 hours. Yeah. And they're like,
you're right.
Just got to throw it down. But
when you have the time to create.
Yeah, when you have time to create, it is cool to really just cool. watch them like, the way they feed off each other is...
So these studio musicians, you're going to go in and you're going to record what we call a rhythm section track, right? So you're going to have drums, bass, guitar, piano.
Tambourine.
Yeah.
Percussion.
Percussion. We'll call it percussion. I'm not a big fan of the tambourine, just so you know that.
Which is crazy because you grew up Pentecostal.
I know. I think it was because I grew up
that's why you don't like
Pentecostal in and people that... Why? Okay.
Let's do a little sidebar.
Why can't people play the tambourine?
Really?
Why?
Because have people are don't well, they don't have rhythm.
That's what it is, right?
But have you tried? I mean, I have. I feel like I have rhythm, but
I
when
don't.
I play the tambourine, then
you
I'm like,
stupid.
Why am I behind?
You can't play the tambourine in worship. Let me say that.
Okay.
Much. When
that
a spirit's you're... moving, your whole body ain't cool. Now, if you're just sitting there. Just giving the old 1-2, that's fine. But if God starts moving, put the tambourine down. Just wave your hands, not the tambourine.
I don't know. Should I tell them the story, my tambourine story?
Just leave out all
I
no
will.
Names,
I will.
No locations.
I will. Just really, really quick.
It's
one,
funny.
So one time we were, I this
you
was,
were leaving.
This was way
I'm
back
here.
This was way back in the day when I was leading a band at the time, and we were doing a little bit of a different genre of music. We weren't doing Southern gospel, but I was playing acoustic guitar, and my drummer had started taking an electric kit at the. I don't know why he did that.
Probably just to save
That's
space.
So much easier.
Saving
man.
Space yeah. and. But you know,
noise
I love
too.
Noise.
You can control
yeah.
the volume
yeah.
as well.
I love acoustic drums though. But anyway,
amen.
So he took a set of electric drums to this gig that we were doing. We go, we set up, sound check, everything's fine. Well, we don't have. He had in ear monitors,
so he
could tune out all the outside noise and just hear his drums or whatever he wanted to hear. However, I did not have in-ear monitors. I was going off the stage monitors. So we get up there, and we're playing. We're having a great time. Spirits moving. Everything's great. And then all of a sudden, this lady picks up a tambourine.
Right in the front.
And she is playing that tambourine. At one point, I look. She was playing it so loud that I couldn't hear the drummer anymore. And so he was driving through. He was playing great. I could not hear anything he was doing. So I was so far off. Like, I was so far off. I looked down at the front row at one point. She had that tambourine around her wrist, slinging it above her head.
See, that is too much.
I was like, oh, it was a disaster.
And we had to stop.
We did. We had to stop. I mean... There was
or did
nothing.
He just turn off the?
He
click.
Just turned he off click, the. Turn off he the turned off the split track, but anyway, regardless, I'm not a big fan.
With that knowledge, when we went into the studio the first time, I told the drummer, I knew how you felt about tambourines, and we were doing this one song, and it was kind of driving, and it was God Will Be Faithful.
How was it?
And so it was, you know, grooving, and so I told the drummer, I was like, hey man. My brother Jacob hates tambourines. He's like, oh, really? I said, can you go in there? Don't say it. Just suggest to the producer that we need to put tambourine on this project. And he's like, absolutely, I got you. So he walks into the booth where Jacob's sitting right in front of him. He's like, Steve, I just think we need some. I mean, he starts playing it right in front of him.
I think
we just need a little bit of tambourine.
I was
man.
Trying to be so respectful, too. I was like, I just don't know about that.
It's
you know,
tambourines and clap tracks.
Clap tracks, yeah.
But definitely, we did learn.
But we did end up putting another. And
the
did you hear?
Needs to do the clap track.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what he does though? When he's putting tambourine, he was going. Ch-ch-ch. I was like, oh, that's how you're supposed to play tambourine.
Not like
it sounded
this.
Great.
Not.
Okay, right. So let's get back to what we were
okay,
talking about.
So.
You're going to need first an engineer.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And a studio to be at. And your producer can help you find a good one and a good fit your price range.
Yeah.
Also.
Amen.
And they will usually coordinate paying your players through the studio. You pay that engineer or the studio owner, and they take care of paying the players that you get that day. And your producer will help you figure out what players you need. He was talking about a rhythm section, just the basics of the track. But if you're like six out of our 10 songs are going to need a banjo or whatever,
right.
Then you might find somebody who plays two things
yeah.
like that and can fill two roles or at least have that person there in the studio the day that you do all that recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. You need to know what you think your songs need when you go into the tracking session as far as musicians go so that you know, or instruments go so that you know which musicians to hire.
Again, from pre-production.
Like, for instance, we hired a really, really, a guy that is really known for his acoustic playing for our Sing Them Again CD. Because it was hymns, and we were going to do it a little bit more stripped down. So we hired a really well-known acoustic player, whereas for This Is Your Day, it was more mainstream.
Back and forth.
Yeah, so we had acoustic. A guy that could do both really, really well. And
acoustic
when you say that, when you say
they
that one studio,
so
they're all incredible.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so...
But the guy on Sing Them Again, like, he could play mandolin,
several
banjo.
He did the bluegrass things,
and it's crazy, man.
Just really cool.
So once you've set that up, you need to set up time in that studio, matches everybody's schedules and their schedule as well, and they'll set you up some days to go down. Some people like to take advantage of less time, less money, but that means less time on each song.
Yeah.
But then those players don't really get to be creative. They'll get one pass, maybe two passes through the whole song, and then they've got to move on. So if you have,
they're
going to
give you what you want. That's the thing.
They're good enough to do that.
Oh, sure.
And it's going to sound great.
But if you have the resources to give them a little bit of time, so like you say a three-hour block, and you try to do two or two and a half songs in that three-hour block or something like, or maybe a song per hour. I think we did like a song per hour.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think we did maybe five songs a day, five or six songs in one day. And that's like a six-hour, two blocks of 3 hours. Anyway.
And that's still working pretty steady.
Yeah. There's not really a break except for like some in the middle to eat something quick.
But it just gives them a chance to breathe a little bit and say, I don't really like what I did there. Let's go back and do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know.
And I think something that maybe I've learned over the last few years, I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything. I want to make that disclaimer. However, I feel like when you have more time, obviously, like we said, you can be more creative. But I think what comes with that are what our producers call signature licks,
mm-hmm.
where they can create these things. You know, like when you hear a song, you automatically know that's Alan Jackson, Chattahoochee, right?
It's recognizable.
It's something really, really
recognizable. Oh, is that what it sounds like?
Shut up, Caleb.
As long as you say so.
Something, you know, they're creating something really recognizable that, you know, kind of defines that song. And I think that's really, really important for people to be able to hear, your audience and your listeners to be able to hear whenever, you know, the finished product's done. As soon as that comes on, they're like, oh, that's This Is Your Day with by Phillips and Banks or whatever, you know, or Man in the Middle or whatever.
And it was a different musician, different studio, but I'm to this day, when I hear, I know it's Glory That Will Be.
Yeah.
I know it. As soon as I'm like, gosh, that's so, I love the kickoff.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important.
Gives you time to get that stuff in.
Yeah. Right. And this last project, I don't think we've had to do it before, but what was the song we had? Well, they played all the way through it, and then we're like, hey, can we bump the tempo? And I mean, it made a big difference, but it wasn't just a couple clicks.
But you had the time.
Yeah, you had the time to, I don't remember which song it was, but it was like, man, it really.
There's nothing like leaving the studio and going,
I wish we'd
have had time to do this and change that. I don't like that feeling. So.
I can't tell you how many times I look at it this way. If you're going to spend the amount of money that you're going to spend on a good quality recording,
get what you want.
You might as well be happy with it, mm-hmm. you know? So take the extra time, I think, on tracking days. So you get all those tracks done, then you go home and you practice with those soundtracks.
You do your homework.
You do your homework so that when you go into step four, I guess it is.
The next step.
When you go into the next step, which are vocal days, that you're not, again, wasting time in the studio. You go in prepared and you're fairly familiar with how it needs to go. At least the basic parts and your solo stuff, right? So
there's some stuff that you don't, you know, get to until you get there. But
mm-hmm. Right. So,
and that's okay, too, because you also want to be able to be creative.
Right.
But you don't want to go in there being like, I don't really know how the melody goes yet, so I don't know how to sing my part.
Yeah, right. You need to be familiar enough to be able to be creative.
Right, right. So,
and he can, your vocal producer, whoever that is, you know, can correct you when you're wrong.
Yeah.
But if you've locked it in your brain one single way, it's very hard to change that.
It is.
Right. So I feel like there's a fine line of
being prepared
and being even overly prepared.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, be a little flexible when you go into the vocal studio. We usually take about three days. We record our vocals in about 3 days. And
if we need more, we leave room for it. But
yeah, so that's about 10 songs, 3 songs a day. So you've got
plenty of time.
Plenty of time to.
And there's 4 of us too. So most of the time, you'll each record separately too. Mm-hmm. So that takes more time.
Singers go early in the morning. I'm just kidding.
It takes more time than you
think.
Than you think.
Now, we did record 1 a cappella song, I think, all...
I think we did a scratch all together and then sang individually.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, you'll go in, and the vocal producer, our vocal producer, John Rousey, he's great at, like, you know, once you get those main parts, then he may main parts down, your solo parts down, your harmony parts, then he may go back in and say, okay, I want you to do... this right here at the beginning, this mm-hmm. vocalization at the beginning, and it just brings, again, you're taking this little demo that you got, you know,
like bringing it to life,
and you're bringing it to life. And I just think that is the coolest process. So you know, he'll come in and do all those things with you, and it's really cool.
You need somebody who can hear parts.
Absolutely.
John blows my mind.
Especially better than you. Yeah, seriously.
You need to find somebody much better than you.
Especially if you struggle to hear parts at all. Yeah, that will be really helpful.
Because they can be creative all day. Maybe their most creative vocal. That you know, you should do this here or this here. But if they can't hear your parts and you can't sing in 4-part harmony, then you got a problem.
Like, I feel like singing parts is something that I feel very confident in doing. But something about new stuff and being in the studio with new material, if I didn't have someone directing me, even though I know the parts, know the chords, I would be struggling.
Mm. And he'll even point out, you know, he might even point out one note.
One note.
And you're like, oh, I didn't really hear the chord that way. And he's mm-hmm. like,
well, you're dumb.
That's not the way it goes. No, it doesn't match. You know, you may have been practicing this, but the way they played this lick or the way the bass player played
there's
this
an
lick,
extra little
you
note
can't
in there
sing
or
that
something.
Note anymore.
Yeah.
Or
John does that
you know.
A lot.
You need somebody to be able to hear.
And then when you finally do sing it, you're like, wow.
That made all the difference in the world, yeah.
Where I don't sing bass naturally, I mean, it's crazy. I like to, John can, it's amazing to me what notes he can sing on his own. But then there, if he's wanting me to go down to a certain spot, sometimes he'll just get into the keyboard and put it in my ear.
Just play the note over and over.
This is where I want you to go. I'm like, does it not sound right at all? Because I don't naturally hear the bass. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially if it's a weird note.
I feel sorry for you.
I know.
But it's crazy when he, John makes the process easier because he doesn't make me feel dumb. You know what I mean? It's like, I know you don't hear it. Nobody really hears this part. I don't know how he does. But then he can also, he knows
he
all
4
of our parts that's together. Part that's the crazy thing. He's like, this is the chord I want it to be, or I want this cluster to happen, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what? You know, it's just crazy.
Again, I think something that's really important is to have somebody that really...
knows you
well, makes you feel confident,
right?
In
and
the
even,
studio, you know.
I'm talking so much. Sorry,
no,
my propranolol hit. I feel great.
This is great.
I don't even remember what I was going to say. Oh, and just because we're talking about one certain person doesn't mean that other people are.
Oh,
oh
no,
there
no.
are plenty there's of people.
So
out there.
We're just speaking from our experience.
The person you're looking for is somebody who can hear the parts really well and somebody that you feel really comfortable with. Even if you don't, even the first time you know you meet the producer, we may not have felt 100% comfortable with them there, but as you grow in that relationship with them, you know that. This is a safe place.
Yeah, you're comfortable enough to mess up, too.
That's
yeah,
right,
this
yeah.
is a safe place to screw up.
Yeah, and, you know, John will say things like, okay.
No, let's try that one more time.
We'll just do that one more
let's
time.
Let's do that again.
I think you have a better one.
I think you've got a better one.
I think you got a better one.
Listening.
Listening. Yeah, we get that a lot. Listening. Listening.
Let's see if we can fix that. Let's see if we can pull that up in Melodyne real quick. See if it's even fixable.
Yeah.
No, it is not.
We'll leave it if it's fixable.
So
go ahead, Carmen.
Next. Then your project needs to get into the hands of... first of all, an editor, okay? And it could be the engineer that you had, whoever you're going to get to, like, make sure that all of the things in your song line up together. You know, sometimes it's really hard to get breaths together or cutoffs at the end together.
Gosh.
And, yeah, S's at the ends of words. But so you need somebody who can come in and clean up the project and then also tune up the project a little bit.
So they use this program called Melodyne, and they will tune all of our vocals to where if we're just a little
bit. Now we're not in the studio singing really bad and then they have to fix it.
No,
but
don't.
Sometimes it's just, if especially if you get a really good like take emotionally or like the vibe is right, but you're just a little bit, just a little off. Let's keep it and we'll fix it later in post.
Right.
But never do anything that you cannot pull off in person.
That you can't do.
That's exactly what John always says, because some mornings I come in there and drag the floor. Whatever. But that John's like, can you do that all the time? I'm like, no, John, I can't. Well, let's put it somewhere else. You can.
Yeah. So don't do things when you're like, oh, they'll just make me sound good. And then you try it in person.
And
you're like,
horrible.
Wow, they did not really record that, did they?
Yeah.
So don't do something like that.
Also, I don't feel like Melodyne is, it's not cheating.
No.
Every song you have ever listened to has pitch correction on it.
Let me say this.
Just get it on as close as you possibly can in the studio, though.
No, that means the pressure is on you only to deliver it well and be as close as you possibly can. Sometimes you are just off from being perfectly in tune with all of you. And our ears are so trained now, listening to the radio and music now, if you didn't do that, you would definitely
hear the difference.
You would definitely know.
You'd be like,
but like I said, don't do something that you can't really pull off, because that's not fair or fun.
Let me say, I want to put a disclaimer out there. There are producers all over the place that can do every bit of this stuff for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like, for instance,
one-stop shop.
Right.
From start to finish of an album, you may find somebody that can do everything. And you may go into this, you've done this a few times, and you realize that you really like this person for this, that, and the other, but you feel like you might identify with a different person to do one thing on the project
You.
It doesn't matter. Like,
your
you can
money,
make
your project.
You can make this what you want it to be.
Right. So you get your editing done, your tuning done. You don't have to do any of that. Those people are just going to do it, and then they'll send it back to you. And then,
mastering, right? Or mixing.
Well, no, we got to get overdubs.
Oh, yeah, if you need them.
So, or if there are any extra instruments that weren't on your... Actually, you need to do this before the tuning. So, after you get your vocals done, then they'll go in and do the overdubs. And by overdubs, I just mean extra instruments that you didn't initially record. So if you...
Orchestra, brass... I don't know.
You didn't have a fiddle player there and you won't fiddle on
right,
this song.
Right, some sort of little...
Something.
We did
that you
a what
get.
Is it a harp? Do we do a harp or a cello or
cello?
Mm-hmm.
Cello. Yeah.
So if any of that stuff needs to be done as well.
Now somebody tell them about orchestration day, because that's a lot of fun. Anybody?
I love orchestration day.
Yeah. So you go into this gigantic. I mean, well, you're in a control room. You don't have to go and watch them. You can just. You know, let
but
them
it's
do it.
So much fun.
But it's really cool to watch them. So, and you've got like, 30 people in there that have sheet music of your music sitting in front of them, and they're playing it. And this conductor that has arranged the string portion of your music or the brass portion of your music or whatever it is. And, you know, you may not put orchestration on every song. You may not put brass on every song. I think on our latest
sometimes
recording,
too much.
We put strings on a couple songs and brass on one song. And we went down and we watched them record it just for fun. And it was an incredible experience seeing those people bring in just another bit of life to your project. It's really
cool. So for that, you're going to need to find someone who does orchestra arrangements or whatever instrument that you want, or some overdubs, if it's just one person and you feel confident that they could come up with their own thing and just
which
come
most
up,
of them honestly can.
Right. But if you're talking about multiple people, you're going to need somebody to write a piece of music for them to play. Because obviously one person can ad lib and do stuff and be creative on their own. But when you need multiple people to work together, like an orchestra, a 13-piece, you know, string section, you're going to need some music. So there are plenty of arrangers out there. And if you ever want to know how we figured out some names of arrangers, you go on Spotify.
Scroll down to those credits.
You press the song that you've heard that you know. You go down to the credits, yes, and they'll say arranger or string arranger or whatever. You can find some names online that you might be able to find. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are guys out there like Trey Ivey. He's an incredible producer. Yeah. Cody McVeigh is a great, incredible producer and arranger.
Does Trey Ivey do
Greater Vision?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think doesn't he do Mylon Hayes too?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Incredible, incredible arranger and producer.
And
so
then with their music, since it's what they wrote, they will usually be the ones to produce the tracks. Like they'll be the one directing the people in the studio when they're doing that. And you're just sitting and watching.
It's really cool.
Or you get the product back when they're done.
I love it.
So you get your orchestra done. Then it'll go to editing and tuning because then the full track will be done. They'll tune everything and edit it just like you want it. And then it'll go to a process called mixing, right? And that's where that is.
That's the worst lot of prayer,
part. That's probably my hardest. Well, besides choosing the songs. I enjoy choosing the songs, I think.
Yeah, I hate.
I think mixing is my least favorite part of recording.
The reason I don't like it is because I am really picky.
Yeah.
And we all four of us don't necessarily even agree on every part of the mix,
but we get to
a happy medium usually.
I will say this as far as the mix, something we've learned is don't pick one device and listen to it on that because you're going
to
shoot yourself in the foot.
Yeah,
well, let's
it.
Explain what we mean by mixing. So, you know, they're going to get the song and they're going to put it into their computer or whatever.
Every vocal, every instrument, every drum, every...
Bringing it up and setting it just right where it needs to be. You know, the drums have to be, you know, it's just a lot to it. Now, thankfully, you don't have to do any of it. But when they finish a mix, then they'll send it back to you and say, okay, you know, what do you want to change? And then you got to listen to it and then you got to figure out what you don't like about it and what you want changed. And, you know, my vocal needs to be a little bit hotter in this section, or the bass guitar needs to be a little bit hotter in this section, or can you bring back the orchestra a little bit, or, you know, whatever. And that seems like really minuscule things, but it gets really overwhelming when you're trying to figure out, what you want.
Another great time to have a producer that you trust.
Yeah, and honestly, if I got somebody that I trusted really, really,
like
really well.
150% trust.
I mean, we trusted Matthew, we trusted John, and they got us great projects.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But one thing I think moving forward, I wouldn't even care to listen to the mixes as much. You know, let's wait until we get really deep into it where you feel like it's almost done.
Yeah.
Then send it to me.
When you're on the tail end of it, you're like, This is
really, really, really close.
Then let me,
you know.
I will say this, that something, it's just a preference thing, but because if I'm not mistaken, we had the option to have our engineer, the guy that was doing everything, he could do mix, aligning, tuning, he could do everything.
Mm-hmm.
But now correct me if I'm wrong, we like it to pass through a couple sets of hands. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, and Carmen and I have talked about this a lot, I don't care who you are. You listen to that same piece of music so many times, you're going to go deaf to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like having, we've got a couple of guys that does our aligning and tuning. And then it goes to our mixer. And it's just different people are going to catch different things in your project. And pick out things that you're like, oh, I didn't even notice that.
That's a really good point.
You definitely think
there are advantages to that and disadvantages too, as far as money.
Yeah, that's the thing financially. I mean, it'll be fine, but it's just, it does help to kind of have.
The more fresh ears you have listening to the project all the way through the process, I think is
make it the best it can be.
Ideal, you know.
But well, we've got people I know because I get a call. Jacob let me hear a couple of the new track. I'm like, yeah, Josh. You know what I mean? Like, it's stuff like that that I'm like, yep. You do have to have. You want everyday people who are like, man, this is great. You kind of want that feedback to see where you're at with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
And what you were saying earlier about listening to your mixes on different devices, you know, most people are listening through a phone or headphones of some sort, not just in their car anymore or wherever. So you listen to it in multiple places so that you know that it's not going to sound bad in any of them.
Right.
Because some things may sound more bass heavy here or it really thin over here and this. So you kind of have to strike that balance where it's going to be recognizable as what you want it to sound like on all devices. You know, it's going to sound different on each
thing. Get a perfect sound system set up. It's going to be like, yeah, this sounds great. Well, yeah, I tuned it to mixed it to what I wanted.
Yeah, and then
listen
you get
to your everyday device, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So just checking those things on different devices just so you don't get an unbalanced something on some device that you're using.
Right. Right.
Or that someone will use.
So, you know, your producer and engineers and all that, they'll do all that mixing stuff. You approve the mixes, then you send it to what they call mastering. And all mastering really, well, I can't speak to this. I don't know.
All this is.
I've just always heard that it's like putting the icing on the cake and it just kind of smooths everything out, you know, from track to track, like, you know, when your first track on your CD ends and then the second track comes in, you don't want this one to be like a good volume and then the next track to be really, really soft where the person that's listening has to turn it up really high or it be really, really loud and then they got to turn
it out.
Just kind of levels everything out through the whole project.
And also brings some sparkle.
Yeah, that's the simplest way to describe it.
Yeah. It's a very complicated thing, and I would never want to do it.
No.
So, but it'll bring some of the, it'll take your project kind of like from dull, even though you like it, but like kind of make it shine.
Yeah.
When it's over.
Just puts the finishing touches on it. So,
That is not it, my friend.
No, it's not.
And then you have to design all your... we're not going to get into
that's
all
what
that,
I was
but there's still so many steps.
Yeah.
You got to get an album
But that
cover.
Is that is the recording process once you approve. And
so you got to have photo shoots. You got to have graphic design. You know, you're designing all those things. You got to pay your royalties, and you know, then you got to find a duplicator. You know, like CD Baby or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Disc makers that you know will kind of you know reproduce the album and package it and then send it back to you.
And we do a lot of that in house. All of that part.
Yeah,
in-house.
That's what I was going to say. If we are going to go ahead and talk about that, get you a great photographer. I mean, the lady that we used this last time, she took great shots.
Amanda Martin.
Shout out. Yeah. She was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Contact her directly.
We also had to have makeup artists to make me and Caleb not look so ugly.
Oh, so. It didn't work, brother. I mean, not for me. You look great, but...
You know, that as far as you're right, as far as the recording process, that's it. You know, and that's all you got to do. That's it.
That's it.
That's all.
2 hours later, I'm just kidding. But I will say this, be picky about your photographer and make sure you get, don't do
what
something that makes no sense. Just, you want a good, clean cut photo of you all.
Mm-hmm.
But like Autumn and Carmen said, we're very blessed. Our girls know how to like, they edit, they can make the labels and stuff. They do all the album info. It just, so as much of that you can do yourself, as long as it doesn't look cheesy, do it.
Do it.
That's fine.
Do as much as you can.
And look at other people's projects, isn't it? You guys just kind of looked at that and was like, I could do that. And you did.
And
I think our stuff looks great.
Your cover being something that matches your album.
Yeah.
I mean, even get creative on what fits what your songs kind of embody, that whole album, what would your cover look like? You know, you don't got to just put your face on there, right? You can, you know, which we did on many of them.
Yeah. But make it your own. Like, for example, This Is Your Day, right? Uh-huh. Okay, day, right? So we were on top of this hill. The sun was like setting,
which is, looks like a sunrise, but it
was actually
setting. We had a great photographer,
and,
Taylor.
You know, you get that idea of your, this is your day, the sun's coming up, and, you know, we're standing there on this little hill. Then on Sing Them Again, you know, we wanted that to be hymns and old songs. And so we made the cover look like an old church hymnal, basically. And it's, instead of it saying church hymnal, it says Sing Them Again. So,
but the inside of it is like a beautiful church, like we're
right. So
I
then
love that
you,
album.
You know, you kind of like, you know, you marry the idea from the sound of the music to the even the design of the artwork. So anyway, we probably bored you all tonight.
How long
but
have we been recording?
I don't know.
7 hours and
only an hour and 10 minutes. So we're okay.
That's plenty.
That's plenty. All right. I'm sorry.
Hi.
Carmen's like, let's go.
I still got it.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you all for watching tonight. Caleb, give them your ending advice, your spiel.
Don't forget to go on here. Follow the YouTube link or our YouTube page if you're not already. Click the little bell. Comment on some of these videos and let us know what you like, what you want to see, or what you want to know about the group. And then if there are guests that maybe you're like, hey, you guys have talked about this person, let us know. We may bring them on here. So,
absolutely.
And then check us out on Facebook if you're not already. 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. Every Tuesday night we go live at 7:30 and we have a great time. We don't go as long as we do on here, but we have a great time.
All right, guys. Thank you all so much for watching. I hope that this was like interesting and informational, and if not, let us know in the comments. This
never
is
this
really
again.
Boring. Don't ever do this again.
PBS but, with P&B.
God bless you guys. We're out like Meemaw's tea.
Bye.